The cool thing about B2B YouTube partnerships is that you are not looking for... You're looking for...
If you are able to share a few horror stories, what are the components of deals that kind of fell apart?
It was one of the first deals that I did in this company, and it was a total flop.
I have 10,000 conversations open all the time. I'm talking with a lot of creators, and I'm handling a lot of things. So if you already come up with the idea, you make it easy for me to say yes, and I'll have it ready in 3 days. That's like gold.
Everyone listening or watching, I want you to just, I hope your ears perked up here.
That's one of the biggest missed opportunities by most creators, for sure.
All right, Alex, y'all have grown 44x over the last 7 months. From B2B influencer partnerships. Tell me how the heck you pulled that off.
Yeah, Justin, like, to be honest, it has been a crazy year, you know, like, it has been exactly almost to a date 1 year since I've been at Perspective. So when I came in, we started from basically zero. There was no creator motion at all. You know, that's one of the reasons that they hired me, like, just to build this partnerships department, and in particular, the creator department in general. So there was some revenue coming from creators. They had done some experiments, nothing super, you know, complex or in too long in time. And when I came in, it was time to, like, okay, let's sit down. Let's figure out how we can 10x this department, basically. And that's where the 44x numbers came. I can safely say that it has turned into, like, actually generating revenue channel for the company, you know, which is super cool to see. And especially in B2B, you know, where revenue matters more than some other things, you know.
So I hear this from a lot of creators who, you know, they want to work with brands who have never really done influencer marketing or partnership marketing, and they're on a Zoom call with a brand, and the brand's just like, well, can you guarantee that you're going to drive a 10x, you know, return if we pay you this amount of money? So I guess I would love your perspective working on the brand side. Like, how did you convince, I mean, they obviously had an open job, like, they wanted to bring you on to do partnerships, but, like, it must have come from above. Like, someone within the organization believed that, like, B2B influencers could drive revenue for the company. So, like, how what's the thought process internally of, like, why this was even an initiative?
That's a really good question. So the main reason is, like, Perspective is a German company as an origin. So it was started in Germany, and it was growing in Germany, like, everything, but everything was done in German, you know, so in the German market, it was growing. So they hit, like, a revenue ceiling. And basically the whole thought process of the company was like, okay, we want to go after the international market, meaning English speaking customers, US based customers mainly. So they decided internally that one of the channels to grow there and faster would be partnerships in general, creators specifically, because when you enter a new market, what you need is trust, right? Like, you need to generate this trust in a new market, in a new audience that they don't know you. Maybe they heard of you, but they don't know that much about you. So when you work with creators, as you know, what you do is, like, you borrow this trust from these people. And basically, you know, that allows you to enter a new market with, it's a bit easier if you just, like, instead of just you doing your own, like, just doing paid ads or just doing, like, certain amount of marketing, like, with creators, you go hand by hand with someone who has that trust already generated in the market. So it just makes sense for them. And that's why they brought me in.
Fascinating. So break down for me the types of different partnerships that you do. Because, I mean, I think the most basic version of this is, like, okay, we're going to pay someone who has, you know, tens of thousands of followers on LinkedIn to make a post about our company. But I'm imagining you're doing lots of different types of things, you know, from webinars and other types of activations. And so how do you guys think about the exact type of formats you pursue?
Yeah, that's a good question. And since, as I said, we started the department from scratch, it was also, like, a lot of experimentation. So obviously we know more or less what to do, but at the same time, you need to always be a bit like, okay, let's test first, then let's see. So actually before LinkedIn, we started with YouTube, which was very, very interesting. So the cool thing about B2B YouTube partnerships is that you are not looking for the people who have the most views, probably. You're looking for the people that are generating the right amount of views, so that they are reaching the people that you want to reach, you know, that's what matters. So in B2B, whenever you look at B2B YouTubers or people who do B2B content on YouTube, they usually create this content for their own business, you know, it's like a lead generation source for them, and they don't have crazy amount of views. Maybe they get 1,000 views per video, 2,000 views per video, but from what I know talking with them is that it brings an immense amount of business for them. So we said, okay, this is like a super interesting channel for us. So that's why we actually tried to do the same. Okay, let's partner with some of these people. And even if the videos have 2,000 views, 3,000 views, maybe it brings a lot of business. And that's what we saw, you know, like one of our top YouTube partners is a guy, he made 3 videos about us. I think in total they have like 5,000 views between the three videos, so it's nothing too crazy. But he's generating revenue every month just because the video is well positioned for a very specific keyword that people are looking for, like high intent keyword. And then the video is like very much like a walkthrough of the platform, so it's like very B2B oriented. He talks about like what can you do with this platform, like what type of results you can do with, you know, like all that kind of stuff. So even if it's just like 5,000 views, I don't know how much revenue that video has generated for us, but it's a lot.
I mean, that's I think very exciting for a lot of people listening or watching to this, because we're trained to think that like we just need to maximize the amount of views that we're getting, and that's the only way that a brand's ever going to want to work with us, is if we're getting tens of thousands of views on our content or whatever. But what you're saying is that if you have established credibility in a very specific niche or market, that can oftentimes be even more valuable to certain brands and advertisers, because like you said, the high intent search traffic looking for that content is really way more valuable than just some arbitrary, you know, high level number. One major gripe that I hear creators share, especially on the B2B side, is that these brands only want to offer affiliate compensation. They say, hey, you know, we don't pay, you know, a flat amount, like we'll give you 20-25% of the sale and look how much you can make because it's recurring software and it's expensive and all that. What would be your advice to a creator who either, like, what could you say to a company to explain to them or educate them on why paying them maybe even a hybrid amount, right? So there's a flat amount up front plus, you know, some sort of maybe reduced commission on the back end, or to pay them a flat amount. What would someone have to say to you, or what would someone have to say to a company who just is very fixated on this affiliate strategy?
Yeah, like, and to be honest, like most of the deals that we do are hybrid, you know, so we pay a flat fee. And then on top of that, we offer the full commission just because we think it's fair, you know, so that's how we operate. There is two parts of this. First, the flat fee, I think it's fair just because it covers like the production costs. You sitting down recording and taking 2-3 hours of your time to do that, then it needs to have some sort of compensation, of course. And then on the affiliate side, we always offer it. Even if they don't ask for it, we always offer it because we want them to see the potential returns that they can have, you know, on top of what we pay you for the video. If we pay you 500 for the video, like 1,000 or whatever we pay you, and then you get 10 signups, and from those 10, you get 5 customers, and then you start earning on top 300, 400 extra on top of that recurring, then you as a creator would also be more willing to make more content for us.
Question for you, how do you think about the halo effect? So like, for example, someone, you know, is watching, you know, one of those three videos that partner made, and he has his affiliate link in the description box of that video. But as you know, a lot of times user behavior is like, okay, yeah, I watched that video and then I open up a new tab and I just type in perspective in a new browser or something, or on my phone or whatever, and they sign up for it. That happens a lot, right? And so like, how do you measure the effectiveness of a partnership knowing that there's going to be some percentage of attribution that you're not able to like completely track?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it's one of the biggest headaches for influencer marketers, or like in general, like how can we attribute or pinpoint the exact revenue that creators are generating? And for us, it has been and continues to be a challenge, you know, because obviously we have what comes directly from the affiliate link, you know, that we can track. We know how much revenue it generates, everything. But then there is a part where revenue gets a bit more fuzzy, or like attribution in general. And what we do is like two things. We have self-reported attribution. So whenever someone joins, creates a free trial, we ask, hey, where do you come from? You know, like, do you come from LinkedIn, from YouTube, from a podcast? You know, like, so that's like a signal. I mean, it's not like a direct signal for the YouTube video in particular, but if in the last 6 months we can see that people coming from YouTube have, increased by 44%, for example, then we know that, you know, what we're doing on YouTube is working. So let's do more of that. So like that's one part. And then the other part, what we are trying to do is like, we're trying to build a model internally. Model, you know, where we kind of track, okay, if we have a LinkedIn post coming out, you know, January 29, 16 hours p.m., then we try to see, okay, from since the moment this post was posted, do we get like an increase in brand search, for example, like in the next, you know, 6, 8 hours, 12 hours, something like that, you know? And that's definitely not perfect, and we are still like working on it. So that's like beta version, what I told you, no? So definitely super hard. And I think if you ask any influencer marketer, they would tell you the same, you know, it's like super hard to track like 100% of the thing. But using these models and using this self-reported attribution and so on, I think we can get closer to like a 70%. 20% attribution, you know, which is still pretty good, I would say.
Yeah. You know, another learning here for anyone listening or watching, if a partner that you're working with is still in the infancy stages, the early stages of their influencer marketing strategy, and they're asking you these questions about attribution, one thing, you put your consultant hat on and you say, oh, well, do you have a step in your onboarding flow where you are asking new customers to self-report how they heard about your tool? And you should be having all the social media platforms on there. So if you hire me to talk about you on YouTube, and this is going to help you not just with a partnership with me, but just your overall strategy in general. And they say, oh no, we never considered that. Thank you so much. This is going to position you as someone who is thinking more deeply about their onboarding flow, their attribution, the ways in which they're measuring influencer marketing. And so a lot of what I talk about, what we talk about here, is like, how do you position yourself as someone who's not just a creator? You're someone who's providing value to them in a lot of different ways. So really, really great point there, Alex. Question about vetting and discovery. I would imagine that, you know, a lot of the software programs out there that allow you to find creators to collaborate with are heavily weighted towards B2C or consumer facing creators. And so if you're someone who, you know, you say, okay, I want to spend, you know, $50,000 this quarter or whatever on creators, I don't know what your budget is, but just some random number, how do you go about deciding how to find and allocate that budget?
This has been one of the biggest challenges for us, you know, because as you said, we use some of these tools that are in the market, and it helps like do like an overall view, like more like a general view. But the problem with that is that in our case, you know, like Perspective in particular is like a lead generation funnel tool, you know, which sounds very niche, because it is, you know. The problem with that is that there is not that many creators who talk about like, who talk to like 100% of our ICP, right? So we need to do like very much niche searches. So what I do is like, I'll just try to pinpoint like a bit more like general topics of like, okay, people who cover more or less this topic on this topic and this topic, you know, are like a good fit for us. And then we search for these people, but then we need to like a second layer of like, okay, there is like this 15 guys that talk about lead generation, but how many are actually a good fit for us, you know? So there is like all of these processes of like, first, obviously in B2B in particular, usually like you target more like a niche, more than like the general market, you know? So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But at the same time, whenever you find one of these good creators, it's way easier to for you to like maybe form like a longer term partnership or something like that, you know? Because whenever you find like one of these good people, you know, that they talk exactly to your ICP and so on, usually if they are in the market, they know who you are already, you know, like they heard of you, of your tool, you know, because you know, it's a smaller niche, you know, so everyone kind of knows, you know, what's happening. So it's also easier to make a deal, but the challenge is to find these people, right? Like
knowing that, what would that creator that you mentioned that made those three really successful videos for you, I would imagine if he came to you and be like, hey, I've got this plan for like a 12 video series, you would pretty quickly be like, actually, yeah, let's do that. That sounds like a good idea. Right. And so like it would be I think a lot of creators think that, okay, I just need to wait for the brand to come to me, like proposing a campaign or an idea. But what you're saying is like, it's way easier oftentimes to convince the brands that you've already partnered with, that you've already done great work for, to convince them to re-engage with you, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's one of the biggest missed opportunities by most creators for sure. Dude, if you have worked with these people one time already, like, why don't you ask like, hey, let's run it again. I will do this time this and this, or like, I will offer you like a 10% discount. I don't know, you know, just like make it easy to work with you again, because if we already know you, like we already know how you work, we already know how you know, how everything works. So if the experience has been positive, then it's like an easy yes, you know, like, I mean, and there's like a really good case right now. Like we are working literally yesterday or the day before, we posted a LinkedIn post with one creator, and he said, hey man, like post is live. By the way, when are we scheduling the next one? You know, like it was just like that. Okay, man, like it's good. Sometimes if you don't say it out loud, then it won't happen, you know. But if you ask, yeah, like just, hey man, like it was a pleasure working with you. I love the tool. Let's do another
yeah.
one.
The other advantage in your situation, or for the creators that you're working with, is like you even said, there's not an infinite pool of prospective people to collaborate with, right? And so that them coming back to you for another engagement makes your job easier, right? Because it's like, okay, I already know that this is kind of working. Like I don't have to like go out there and like search through a needle in a haystack to, you know, find the right partners. So talk to me about how you evaluate a prospective partner. If someone were to pitch you right now, okay, great, Alex, I'm listening to this. I'm a lead gen. I've got 40,000 on TikTok and I talk about lead gen strategies or whatever. What would be the formula of a good pitch? Like if they were to slide into your inbox and try to collaborate, propose a collaboration, what would you be looking for in that outreach?
That's a really good question. I think, especially in B2B, it's very important if you show some sort of knowledge around the tool that you are pitching to work with, right? Because I get a ton of generic pitches, or even when I reach out, when I do the outreach, people are like, oh yeah, let's do it, you know, but they don't ask anything about the tool, they don't ask how it works, you know. So that's already like a yellowish flag, meaning okay, you are just like, I mean, I don't want to say mercenary, but kind of like, you know, you're willing to take the money when you haven't even, maybe you don't even know the tool, you know. But others, the ones that actually ask questions about the tool, like, hey man, I love the tool, I've seen your ads here and here, how does this work, like, do you think it works for my audience, you know? Do you think like we can do this or that, you know, like people who are very proactive about like asking about the tool, or like showing like any sort of interest about the tool, you know, like even like lower level interest is, it gets you in front of like 99% of creators. I would say that for creators, you know, like just try to do a little bit of research, because again, when you land a deal with a B2B company, it's way more likely that you can earn repeat business if you show that, you know, you like the tool, you know how to promote it, or like you have an idea how to promote it, you know. So,
you know, the thing that's really interesting about what you just said is that even though you as a marketer might be reaching out to a creator, that's still, you're still not 100% sure if that partner is going to be a good fit. Right. You think on the surface, you did a cursory review of their content. They seem like a good fit. But like the moment that they respond, if like you said, if they're a mercenary and they're not really interested, that kind of scares you a little bit. You're like, oh, well, maybe I don't want to work with this person based on how this initial interaction went. There's still a lot of alpha, or still a lot of opportunity for you to convince a brand that was kind of on the fence about you that, okay, actually, yes, let's move forward with this person. Because even though you may have reached out to someone with twice as many followers, if that person is kind of a yellow or red flag, you might abandon that negotiation because something just spooked you about that conversation. The other thing that's really interesting that you said is that especially for B2B, there's increased opportunity for you to collaborate with that brand on an ongoing basis. And I'm suspecting it's because most B2B partnerships are for tools that have a recurring revenue component. And this might not be present in every consumer brand, right? There might be just a one-off purchase or something. But what you're saying is that a lot of times, especially B2B software, the lifetime value, the LTV of a customer, you're willing to pay the CPA, the cost per acquisition of a customer, is maybe higher than other types of brands. Is that accurate?
Yeah, 100%. Because we are recruiting software. So, you know, we sell monthly plans, we sell yearly plans. That's the thing, you know, we have to be always on, like selling, not selling, like, well, talking about it, like being in the market, you know, like kind of stuff. We have campaigns going out throughout the year, you know, so there's like many ways that you can collaborate with us. And for me, the perfect partner is someone who can do two videos for me every month, or like one video for me every month, or two posts every month, and I don't need to be finding someone new. I just have this person that is like a good ambassador, who starts to know the tool. Like even with time passes, they get more knowledgeable about the tool. They know how it works. They know the ins and outs, you know. So it's even easier, you know, just to work with these people. And for us, with our top creators, like the ones that we have a better relationship with, we even have like a one-on-one Slack channel on our internal channel, and then we just have, you know, instead of email or whatever, we just bring them in, and it's like, hey man, like, okay, let's plan the video for this month, like. Here's some ideas. They brainstorm with us, you know, so it's like a way more direct collaboration. I think that's very valuable for a brand. If you are a creator and you manage to get in there, then that's also super valuable for you, because you can get even more business. You know, like right now, we're working with another creator. He has been doing all of these videos for us. And yesterday or a few days before, he says, hey, by the way, my wife also makes videos. Like, she's interested in the videos with you. You know, are you interested? And we were looking for a female creator for like a specific thing I want to do. So we was like, okay, there you are, you know, more business for you just because you are on the inside, you know?
That's amazing. If you are able to share a few horror stories of working with partners that you thought it was going to be good, but ultimately the relationship went south, what are the components of deals that kind of fell apart to your regret?
There is one in specific that came to mind when you mentioned this, like, and it was one of the first deals that I did in this company. So, and it was a total flop. There was a few reasons I think it didn't work. And it was like this YouTuber, in this case, he had like a bigger audience. So that probably was like the first mistake. Like the audience was a bit more generalist, but you know, he was more or less in the covering parts of our ICP. The videos had like really good quality. You know, he was a really good communicator. So it was like, okay, let's make a video with him. We made a deal, I think it was like, we signed the contract, I think it was in May, and the video didn't go out until October. So you can imagine, like, whoa. You know, 4 or 5 months in between. A few things was like his schedule. So he said, okay, the video cannot go out until the next month. But then the next month came the next month, and the next month became the next month. In the meantime, we had to do a lot of reviews of the content because he was not really like nailing what we were trying to do. Like, I don't think he was understanding, or maybe he was understanding, but he didn't have enough interest on it, you know? So by the time when the video got live, even his audience had changed a little bit because he switched the content a little bit, you know, because it was 6 months after, you know. So it was just, it was a total flop. I think we had like one sign up from that video. And I think we paid, you know, we paid four figures, even close to five for that one video, you know. So total flop, but it was also like big learning lesson for us. Like, okay, maybe we should go for smaller people who can, we can work more one-on-one. We can iterate faster, you know, instead of like going after like bigger YouTubers who have like very long schedule of like, okay, we have all of these sponsored videos going out, you know. At least in our case, that's, it has proven that he has been working like this, you know.
You made a comment towards the beginning about the value of borrowing trust from a creator or from an influencer, especially if you're trying to go into a new market or segment that you haven't, you know, there's not a lot of awareness about your tool in. And so I'm wondering, how big of a role does repurposing creators' content play in the strategy? So beyond the content going live on their organic distribution channel, on their LinkedIn newsletter, YouTube, whatever, relative to you getting the rights to run ads with that content or repost it on your platforms, for example?
Yeah, not huge, I would say, because the one thing about perspective is like the main growth channel that we have right now, we had in the past and still have right now, is like paid ads, you know, paid media. Because, you know, the founders, I'm part of the founding team, before building perspective, they were running an agency and they were doing paid ads for customers, you know. So it's like the bread and butter of like the marketing of the company. The problem with paid ads is that, especially as you grow and as you invest more money, and you need more creatives, you know, like you need more ad creatives, you need ad material, ad fuel, you know. So that has been a big blocker for us, especially in the past, because we don't have it, we cannot produce ads fast enough, you know. So that's where creators comes in, and that has been like a huge value addition for the company, you know, because for virtually every piece of content that we do with a creator, we try to secure the rights, just because it's useful for us, you know. Like we take a LinkedIn post, we turn it into a testimonial, we make it, take a screenshot, we put it on Meta. From videos, we cut pieces, we turn it into like another ad, we put it on Meta ads, you know. So even with LinkedIn posts, like we boost them on the platform with all the little ads, you know. So Instagram, we haven't done that much, but we plan to do even more. We do Instagram reels, you know, so we whitelist those reels, you know, which meaning, you know, we boost it from the creator's account. Then we also ask for the raw files so we can run them from our profile as well, you know. So this, that, all of that actually for us, publishing the content is just the first piece of the puzzle, you know. Like we do so much with this content just because it's also on the bread and butter of the company, like doing these paid ads, and we lack ad creatives, you know, so we need this fuel.
Everyone listening or watching, I want you to just, I hope your ears perked up here, which is like, if you were to knowing that there's an appetite, a hunger for more creative, always a hunger for more creative at a company like Alex's, if you were to reach out and pitch him, a potential pitch could be, hey, I could actually just make a bunch of ads for you. I don't even need to really post this on my platform. I'll make you 30 ads. And for someone like you, you go and knock on the door of your paid media team and you're like, hey, this creator is really good, they're offering to make us a bunch of ads, like what do you say, you want to like partner up here, you know, like give me some of your budget to like pay this person to make ads. Like that's potentially an easier conversation than like, hey, let me talk about you on my YouTube or my LinkedIn or something, because you guys have this need. I'm going to ask you a semi-controversial question, or maybe it's not controversial. I am curious about your thoughts on AI user generated content, where there's all these software programs now that like, you know, can make ads that like are from fake influencers. What is your perspective as a marketer on like the utility of tools like that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question and very much up to, you know, discussions today, right? So we have done smaller tests with AI UGC, like super small, and to be honest, like the results are way mixed results, you know. Like we prefer to work with human creators, at least for now, you know. I don't know how it will evolve, you know, in the future, but for us, humans have definitely do way better return for us, you know. So it's easier to work with them, it's like it's easier to get what you want, it's easier to make revisions. Like with AI, yes, you can do anything, you can do it way faster, but the quality is not the same. At least for me, I do get like a bunch of ads on Instagram or whatever, and you can tell from a mile away that they are AI. At least for now, you can, maybe in 6 months, this conversation like doesn't make sense at all, right? But right now, I mean, it's not that I hate it, actually. I think it will be a core part for many companies that will use that because it's cheaper and faster. But for us, like humans have, you know, outperformed AI for now, you know, so.
Yeah, I get a lot of pitches and I'm sure you do too, but like, it's like a visceral reaction. The moment I get an email where I even get a sniff that it's like AI, I just delete it immediately. I'm like, okay, this is not a real person. Like this is not relevant to me. They don't care about me at all. And so to your point, like there is this like reaction that I think a lot of people have to being served something that was made by AI. So it will be for for sure interesting to see. And I'm curious, like, in terms of scalability, we mentioned the, you know, the number 44x, like it's grown obviously from zero, so it's a big number. Do you look at creator marketing, influencer marketing, as a scalable channel relative to something that is traditionally looked at like paid ads, like Meta or TikTok or whatever, like that is looked at as the scalable channel? Like, do you think creator partnerships is something that can be scaled?
I think it can be scaled, but it's like, it takes maybe a bit more time. So it's not that fast as paid ads, you know, just put more money in the on the thing and that's it, right? For us, like, first you need to do like a lot of the groundwork. Let's say you need to build all of these relationships or all of the systems that you need in place to scale it. That's like where we are right now. Like, we are still building the systems even 1 year in, you know. So, but our goal is like to 10x the output that we get from creators, just because we have more or less the experience. We know what formats work. We know which platforms will work for us. So it's just a matter of like, let's find more creators that can do this. But at the same time, in our case in B2B, like as I said, the pool is not that big, you know. So we are trying to find other ways on like how to maximize this. And you know, one way is like UGC, you know, like we are starting to work more with UGC type of creators to create content for us, you know, so not that much on their channels, but like on our channels, you know, so we can test, do more creative iterations, you know, like see what angles resonate, see what works, see what doesn't, you know. And instead of doing 15 or 20 more polished pieces of content like on YouTube or LinkedIn, then we have 50 Instagram reels that someone did in 1 month, and then from those 50 maybe 10 work, and those 10 we boost with paid ads, you know. So that's how we think about the scale of creators, you know, in this case.
If you had to think about the absolute perfect partner, if you just were dreaming, you fell asleep one night and you have this beautiful dream and you imagine the perfect partner, what are the three or four characteristics of someone who you just would continue to pay month after month after month because they made your life easier? What does that partner look like?
First point would be like, they are a user of the product, ideally, like in our case, software B2B. If they are a user, then it's already like a super huge green flag, because they know the product, they know how it works, they know what they can use it for, you know, like, so that's huge. You know, if you know the product already and you use it on your day to day, then it's way easier also for you to create content, right? Like, and to come up with content ideas or things like that. So then second one for me is like very much the how the communication flows, right? Like, I'm not expecting you to answer my emails like in 30 minutes, of course, you know, like everyone has a life and you have a bunch of things, but I also don't expect to have to be following up with my emails for like a week, you know, just to get an answer from you. Like, for me, like, this responsiveness is very important, just because it, like, it shows the lack of interest if there is not that responsiveness, you know, like, because even if you're not interested in working anymore, or like you're not interested in the partnership or whatever, it's so easy to just send an email like, hey man, like, not the right time right now for us. Let's, you know, let's talk in 2 or 3 months, you know. That's easy to do, but you know, you have to follow up with you 3, 4, 5 times just to get like a reply on whatever, you know, then that's already like another one, like a red flag. Third one is like also like how proactive they are in, like, you know, we don't expect you to come up with all the content ideas and all the angles and everything. You know, that's what we are here for. Like, we help with that. But if you come with ideas already, you know, like, hey, we did this video, it did well, or maybe it didn't do that well, I think it's because ABC, why don't we try, you know, XD and whatever next, you know, just like be proactive. Because as I said, like me, I have 10,000 conversations open all the time. I'm talking with a lot of creators and I'm handling a lot of things. So if you already come up with the idea, you make it easy for me to say yes, and even put a price on it, you know, like, hey man, why don't we do this video for this amount? Like, hey, and I'll have it ready in 3 days. That's like gold, right? Like, okay, let's do it. You know, even just for me to make it easy for me, just make the point of contact on the company, you know, that person, make their lives easy, you know, and I think you have like, you hit the sweet spot, you know, like if you make them look, I had a boss in my agency days back in the day that said, we were working at an agency, so we had our clients, you know, that were companies. So he was like, if you make that person look good to their bosses, you're gold.
Appreciate you. And yeah, if anyone wants to connect with you or learn more about Perspective, how can they do so?
Yeah, so I'm mostly right now, these days I'm hanging out on LinkedIn mostly. So they just like look up my name there. They'll find me. Have also happy to solve any questions about B2B marketing, even brands or creators, you know, whatever you need to ask, you know, happy to help, because I think it's a super interesting space. I think it's starting to blow up right now, you know, so even if you are like a new creator and you know where to go, if you go into B2B direction, I think it's like it will be huge in the next coming years for sure, you know, so yeah.